Hello and welcome to Conversations on Sex, Addiction, and Relationships. I'm Wendy Conquest, and I'm here with Dan Drake and Tim Stein. And today we want to talk about healthy masturbation. So this is an interesting topic because some people would say that masturbation isn't healthy in any way. And other people would say that there is such a thing as healthy masturbation. So why don't we start by saying, you know, when we're talking about healthy masturbation, what does that mean? Can we start there?
Sure.
Yes.
Well, for me, so for at least the people I work with, I mean, I'm going to focus my experiences with, you know, when it comes to sex addiction or when things have become compulsive or problematic around sexual behaviors. I mean, we've talked about behavioral addictions versus chemical addictions. And the goal with the behavioral addiction isn't to stop your behavior necessarily. The goal isn't to just stop sexuality of all kind. It's to change our relationship with our sexuality. So I guess what I would say, masturbation could be part of healthy sexuality. There's a bunch of nuances with there, but I guess when it comes to that, to me, it's changing relationship with what masturbation was. So for most of the people I've worked with, masturbation was a way to disconnect from self or others, or numb or self-soothe or medicate, or use as a kind of maladaptive coping strategy. What if it didn't have to be that? What if it could be connecting with self? It could be not shameful or secretive, or, you know, it could be, you know, integrative as opposed to disconnecting. So to me, that's what I would look for. If I'm closer to self and with maybe my relationship with God or higher power, is that possible?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also think that there's we specifically talk a lot about sex addiction, betrayal, trauma, and that's the areas that we work in. And so I think that there's a difference between what would healthy masturbation, and I will say I don't like that word, but I'll come back to that in a bit. But what does healthy masturbation for somebody who's in recovery look like versus what does healthy masturbation for somebody who's not an addict look like? And, you know, because like teenagers who may not be addicts, it's not uncommon that they're masturbating rather frequently as teenagers. And that's not necessarily abnormal. And I wouldn't even necessarily call that unhealthy, even though it may not be what I would refer to for my clients or for somebody in recovery as healthy masturbation. And for me, healthy masturbation is that it's self-pleasuring. And I always prefer that terminology. It's healthy self-pleasuring that is connected to and an experience of their own sexuality, and it's spending a time to be sexually intimate with themselves and to enjoy that sexual intimacy with themselves, which mm-hmm. is very different than what I refer to as addictive masturbation, which is I am stimulating myself to either get to orgasm or to ride that wave pre-orgasm to get as much intensity and escape as I can from that experience, or just to sort of numb down something that's feeling uncomfortable.
So, and I hear you both, I think, talking about the male experience. And so for women, a lot of times women are shamed, like men too, are shamed around touching their own genitals, around exploring their bodies. And so for girls and women, masturbation can be, or self-pleasuring, or just self-exploring can be a way for them to know their bodies better. And dare I say, then communicate that to a partner that they have. Because I think a lot of times men will guess at what is pleasurable for a woman. And unless that woman is able to say, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. And how does she know that unless she starts that journey on her own? So I'm going to put that out as a possibility.
Yeah. Well, I don't know these days, but definitely I think I've heard that from women, you know, how women or girls were socialized in the world to, you know, masturbation is a bad word and only boys do that, or, you know, you're somehow shamed. So I appreciate you even bringing it up that you're right. How else do you, explore, understand your own body if you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so also the whole piece of, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that believe that sex should not happen before marriage. So therefore any dating or any relational experiences will have a non-sexual component. And so I've certainly had many stories told where people will get married and then it's time to have sex and they don't know what to do, how to do it. It can be a very unpleasurable experience, painful experience. Both people are confused and upset, and there hasn't been support for them to learn their own bodies.
You know, changing topics slightly, but you just brought up marriage, and that brings to mind for me when I think about healthy masturbation within a marital context, it's that it's on the table. I mean, I don't mean physically on the table, but it's on the table. Everybody's aware of it, you know, not like I'm telling my partner, maybe it's on the table.
Yeah, table too.
If that's where your healthy eroticism takes you, go for it and have a wonderful intimate experience, you know, on whatever table you choose. But
just not during family dinners.
No. Nobody needs that.
No, but really what I mean is it's not like, you know, that you're going to your spouse or your committed partner and you're telling every single time, hey, I masturbated. But they're aware that masturbation is something that is in your own sexual experience and sort of roughly what sort of that frequency might look like. And that if they hear or find out that you've masturbated, that it doesn't feel like it was a secret or it came out of left field.
Yeah. And that's what you made me think of something really important, Tim, because a lot of the people I've worked with use masturbation. It may not be secretive, but they use it as a way to, you know, it's a simpler path. It's a path of least resistance. I don't want to deal with rejection from my partner. So I'm just going to, you know, take care of myself over here. And I think it may not be secretive, but that's also, I think healthy masturbation would also involve, if the partner wanted to be a part of something, it wouldn't be a way to keep from sexual intimacy in the relationship. It's not in lieu of, it's maybe in addition to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, also I love the idea of if a couple is saying, hey, yeah, I can understand if you masturbate, you know, you have sex on your own. I think it's important for couples to talk about circumstances around that. So is it when they are apart and traveling? Is it, or when, if they are under the same roof and sharing a life together, do they say, hey, you know, I was thinking about you today and I got really excited. And so I, you know, indulged in masturbation, but it was all about you. And so I think it's a conversation that has to happen between the couple and what this looks like, you know, because, and especially, I just want to say, like, oh, if there's been sexual betrayal, this does not happen. This conversation does not happen within the first 2 years, at least.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, let me just put that out
there.
We
hear that. And I think that's so, and actually I have, if anyone wants it, I had a questions I created for someone considering a healthy masturbation plan. So just way to think through it. Why now? What's the timing around this? Putting together a more intentional plan around it. So I'm happy to just send that out if anyone wants it.
Yeah, my time frame is not until they've had a minimum of 18 months of sobriety under their belt, typically, am I even opening up this conversation?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, right. So this is at least 18 months to 2 years out. And where can they get that, Dan? Where should they get
it? I don't think I posted it. I can email it to anybody. If you just email info@banyantherapy.com. We can just send that to anybody that wants it.
That's great.
Can I say something? So, and I have the voice of every partner in my head right now saying, we're talking healthy masturbation. That does not feel safe for me, for my relationship. You know, sexuality is what betrayed me, you know, whether it was porn use or acting outside the relationship, whatever it was, that feels really scary to now talk about, wait, this, my addicted spouse may be considering masturbating in a new way. That doesn't feel safe.
Right.
So what do we do with that? Right. That's an important thing, so, right?
Well, and because, yes, because as we said earlier, that masturbation can definitely be to be pulling away and out of the relationship. A person can be anxious or depressed and not sharing that with their partner and trying to medicate with masturbation. So, and that is destructive to the relationship as well. So I think the conversation is, first of all, why, like under what circumstances am I inclined to be thinking about masturbating? So I think that's where the conversation has to start. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's also a thing about, is this something that we agreed to do? I mean, is this, you know, this is where it gets a little sticky because it's an individual sexual behavior. And yeah, at the same time, it's a part of your sexual relationship.
Yeah.
So like, I think about a person that I know who was opening up to healthy masturbation for themselves, and their partner knew, and the partner at some point came to them and said, "Hey, I just want you to know that I know when you do that, I can tell. And it feels like you've had sex with someone else other than me," which you have, you've had sex with yourself. And my reaction is I pull away. Mm-hmm. And I'm not telling you what to do and that you can't or can't do this. I just want you to know what my experience is. Mm-hmm. And that was really powerful. And I appreciated the way that that person brought it to this person. The partner brought it to this person because it wasn't saying, I'm going to step in and control your individual sexuality and your sexual behaviors, but I'm letting you know how it's impacting our sexual relationship and our relationship in general. And it gets a little sticky with masturbation because it's an individual sexual behavior. And so it's an individual choice to some extent, but it also has an impact on the relationship and the sexual relationship. And so it's also a couple's conversation to have.
I think it right. is. I do agree. It's an individual behavior, and who knows? I mean, maybe prior to, usually our couples have there's been betrayal. There's been secrets. These
right.
behaviors have been secretive. So to me, sexual behaviors become inherently less safe. Any behavior, whether healthy mm-hmm. or not, like there's a relational component. I don't think we can deny that. So I do agree that if someone's partnered, I personally think we have to include the partner in a plan. And I think, and I personally also agree having, you know, therapist or sponsor or coach mm-hmm. or other people, having your team a part of this to say, hey, yeah, I think you're lying to yourself. I think you're deceiving yourself about your readiness. Sounds like you're really trying to, you know, pull something. You're not quite ready. Doesn't seem like you're ready. These mm-hmm. reasons. So having those good, safe people that can speak into your life, I think is vital too.
Yeah. It's interesting because a conversation topic that I was thinking about is around privacy, because it comes up every once in a while in sessions where the addict will say, well, aren't I allowed any privacy whatsoever?
Yeah.
It can be regarding passwords on a phone or, you know, social media or, you know, and so it's an interesting question when it comes up. And early, I mean, what I say is early on in sobriety, no, the answer is no. So if you want privacy after your sex addiction has been discovered, you're asking for too much. It's not healthy for you, and it's not healthy for your partner. So there has to be openness and accountability and transparency. But I'm wondering if there is some point where you think that addicts can have privacy, quote unquote, privacy.
Well, you know, it's interesting as you're saying that. There's a part of me that's like, well, this is about program stuff. And, you know, it's not appropriate for the partner to control the program, but it's also not appropriate for the addict not to take the partner's experience into consideration. So there's always that dynamic. But at the same time, when you say, well, does the addict get privacy? And my answer that I find myself leaning into is no. And what I mean by that is that as an addict in recovery, you're having conversations about all these aspects of your life with your sponsor, with people in program, with your therapist. You know, if you're in a relationship, probably with your partner, as a sex addict, that means that you're having conversations about your relationship, your sexual behaviors. If you're going to add a new sexual behavior into the repertoire, you're having a conversation about how appropriate that is. It doesn't mean that every single time you have sex that you're calling your sponsor to say, hey, woohoo, put a stake in the sand today. But it means that the privacy about what's happening in your bedroom to some extent becomes, it isn't there, because all of these things are talked about as a part of your recovery in order to make sure that you don't get wandering into areas that are going to pull you back into your addiction. Because
I agree. Yeah. A couple thoughts. I one caveat to what you said, Wendy, earlier about privacy, the area. Yes, we all can advocate for privacy, yet with betrayal, what was taken, there's deception, there's dishonesty involved. So how we heal that is through transparency. So the one caveat I'd say, the privacy needs to come in, you know, therapy, work, you know, that's private on some level, you know, of course, I think sharing what happens in there, but having a safe space where you can journal or do your recovery materials, all that stuff. That's where I think privacy comes. Passwords, I think transparency, we need transparency around the areas where someone was deceptive. And if I'm later on to my thought about what you said, Tim, if I need a private space, probably it's because I feel some sort of shame. If I'm not open about this, then that's worth looking at. If it's private because I don't want to talk about it because I feel embarrassed or ashamed, that maybe if I'm doing something that I need to do in secret, that probably isn't going to be good for my recovery anyway.
Yeah, there's a concept that I often tell the people I work with, which is if you feel like you don't want to talk about something, you've got to talk about it. You know, and so when we feel like, I appreciate what you're saying, when we feel like we want privacy, we probably need to share what's going on with somebody else to make sure that we're not, you know, having our addict brain sort of take over in some way.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that just for our listeners and viewers, Dan co-wrote a book on the intimacy pyramid. And so we're talking a lot about honesty. The word trust hasn't come up so much today, but honesty. And so it's called the intimacy pyramid, right, Dan?
Well, it's called Building True Intimacy.
Thank you.
Based on the intimacy pyramid, but yeah.
Building True Intimacy. Yeah, thank you. And you can get it on Amazon and Kindle. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Just a little plug there.
Thanks, Wendy.
Well, do we have any last burning thoughts about healthy masturbation?
I have one. It's a big wrench where I'm going to probably address it. I just want to throw this out there. I understand that based on someone's faith background, maybe familial background, like this is a big topic. So I wouldn't say that we have all the answers, and I can understand and respect that people have different backgrounds and views of this. I think it's just worth looking at, you know, is it possible to have healthy masturbation? Is that possible for someone not in recovery and in recovery? And I do think there's a possible exploration for this, but done with a lot of care, a lot of intention, really, really, really honoring and respecting the safety needs of the partner, et cetera.
Well, and it needs to match your value system. And, you know, when I think about the difference between deprivation and asceticism, you know, am I depriving myself of something? There's something that I want to do but I can't do it. And I'm feeling angry and resentful that I can't do it, versus asceticism, which is I'm going without for a higher purpose. And so for many people, if it fits within their moral system that masturbation isn't something that they're doing, are they able to lean into it? Are they embracing asceticism, which is, this is something that I am choosing not to do, and it's for a higher purpose, and I'm very clear on what that higher purpose is.
Yeah, and I just want to circle back to the privacy thing and the, no, you don't get to have privacy. I just want to say that that could be triggering for a lot of people that are dealing with enmeshment issues and trying to find their own autonomy. And so I see this a lot. It's like, hey, when do I become autonomous? I was trying to do that as a way of acting out, you know, unconsciously. And now you're telling me that I don't have autonomy over my own sexuality in any way. So that's probably a topic for another day, but I wanted to throw that in there.
Good point.
Probably.
Thank you all for listening and viewing today. If you liked this episode, please like us. And if you want to subscribe, please do so. And also, we have the opportunity for you to submit questions to us, which we then do in an episode called a mailbag episode. And the email is conversations.sar@gmail.com. We welcome your questions. And thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.